Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, Robert Knott and Rob DeWalt will be with us speaking of the arts. Today and also on Monday, we're going to be talking about many themes relating to D.H. Lawrence and the performances and films that are happening here in Santa Fe related to D.H. Lawrence. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Stephen Lowe. He's a playwright. A production of his play Empty Bed Blues is running at the Santa Fe Playhouse this weekend and next. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So I have to just say honestly that before I went to this play, I was a little worried because most of the plays and films that I've seen about literary characters or artists are not that good. This play was fantastic, and I was surprised, and I wondered how you decided to write it, to take on these literary characters as theatrical characters.
Well, to start with, of course, D.H. Lawrence. I mean, I'm born in and brought up in the same town that Lawrence was brought up in England, in Nottingham. And when I was 13 or 14, there was all the fuss of the first publications over here of Lady Chatterley's Lover. So it was very difficult for a working class lad not to be affected by D.H. Lawrence. I'm considerably older than that now, but I've had a kind of relationship with him. I've adapted another play called The Fox from his work. But he's always a character. He's one of the great writers of the 20th century, so, I mean, he had a particular passion and interest for me. But I came by accident against the two of the other characters in the play, who are these remarkable American couple called the Crosbys. Did you know about the Crosbys before you saw the play?
No, I didn't.
No, they were really the kind of Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda of the Paris emigre artists in the 1920s. He was a very rich member of the Boston banking community, and she was a girl from the other side of the river. And they lived out a kind of philosophy, a sexual and political and artistic philosophy, that I knew would clash with Lawrence and Frida, but that they'd spent this strange weekend together in the Moulin, in the Crosby's house just outside Paris. And the four characters just began over a period of time. I hadn't decided to write a play about them, but gradually began to fascinate me. It's the characters more than anything else that drew me to it.
The characters of Crosby and his wife, as you say, their open marriage and their apparent freedom and so on. I was watching the play and I was thinking that from our point of view, almost 100 years later, it feels as if that kind of idealism about doing away with repressive social norms and things like that is a thing of the past. Even those who are attempting it today aren't very idealistic about it. So you're really capturing this unique moment in time.
Yes, I mean, well, that was the kind of intention between two philosophies about breaking through. I mean, Lawrence's philosophy is largely misunderstood, I think. He was pretty much monogamous, you know, and very passionately in love with his wife, Frida. And quite moral in a strange way. So that kind of early 1960s feel that the Crosbys have in 1928 is kind of dramatically very interesting to look at.
And it works so well as theater. What were the sources that you used to get the factual part of this meeting between these two people? I mean, was that a real event?
It was a real event, and in fact, I drew everything in it from four diaries. They all four, Frida, Lawrence, Harry, and Caress Crosby, wrote in different ways about the weekend. And the one bit that fascinated me was this bit where they, where the play gets its title from, which is Empty Bed Blues, which they played the Bessie Smith. Frida loved the Bessie Smith record, and Lawrence, in a fit of passion, confusion, or whatever, broke it over her head. They had quite a volatile relationship.
Right.
So all the key incidents in the description of this weekend were verified directly from the people themselves, from Harry Crosby's diaries or letters or whatever.
It's such a rare opportunity to have four different descriptions of the same weekend. Was it like a Rashomon kind of thing? I mean, how different were they?
Exactly what it was like. And that was the joy of the play is trying to see, when you write about characters, is seeing how the way they see the world, which is, of course, only partial, for all of us, only partial. So it was getting into the way that all four of them saw and described the world and trying to guess what really was happening, you know, as a kind of game. Rashomon's a very good example of the idea behind it.
Could you distill from the diary, from the way they wrote, moments where somebody was not quite telling the truth, for example?
Yes indeed. I mean, Harry Crosby was really found the working classness of Lawrence a real shock. And he tries to hide that in the diaries, and he tries to hide the effect that of Lawrence's challenge to his own poetry. But you can see where the pain lies there. You can see the confusion. And, of course, he was a man who was very shortly going to commit suicide.
Right,
so you're
right.
reading them like transcripts for a trial, where they're obviously not necessarily true, but they guide you into how the person wants to see it.
It is so interesting when you think about diary writing as a form that somebody would be dishonest in their own diaries, which presumably nobody else is going to read.
Yes. I think people are not dishonest, but they're not necessarily knowing the truth of their own situation, are they? I mean, you know, we can all talk about where we are in a relationship, and it may not, it's the way we see it. You know, we may be misleading ourselves in, you know, the changes that we expect in others and the changes that we're not going to make ourselves. So they're interesting kind of testimonies, and I wanted nothing to happen in the play, crucially, that they all describe. So going to the magic well that they go to, the painting of the eggs, and all those things were, you know, things that they did then. And there are photos of the weekend.
Very interesting. So how do you work? Okay, so you have these sources, and then your artistic craft comes into it. You're writing these characters' lines, presumably trying to sound as much like them as possible. Does that... Writing that dialogue, was that very influenced by the diaries, or how did you do it?
Well, I did various different ways. The accent that Lawrence uses is an accent that I grew up with or very close to. So actually hearing his voice became probably the easiest thing to do. Also, in the writing, you can hear his voice is so strong in the poems. You can quite quickly latch into writing it, I think. I say quickly, it took me about 3 years, you know, from the start of the play to what you're seeing now. The Crosby's, well, I'm not American, but my wife's an actress, and I listen to Brooklyn accents and Boston accents, try to get some feelings out. And Frieda, I work with a German actress who speaks very good English, and to get some sense of how that would be in the rhythms of it, because in a way, they're four different voices, aren't they? It's like a quartet. Like a
right.
kind of musical quartet. So the quality of the voices was fantastically important to me.
Has this play ever been performed in Nottingham?
It has been. The original production was here for that reason. And it was part of the initial read-through of it, was part of the International Lawrence Festival. And then I decided we staged it here at a local theatre, and we're looking now for a national tour of it over here.
It would be wonderful to see it in Nottingham. It would be wonderful to see it in Britain. Have there been many productions of this play? I mean, here we are doing it in New Mexico, to whom the place to which Lawrence has another connection.
Yes, indeed. We only did the play in Nottingham, the first production of it a year ago. There's producers on it now trying to look for a London venue and then a national tour. So, strangely, you're the second production, you know, which is always the most interesting.
Very
because
interesting.
It's the one in which the writer's not around telling you how it should be. So it's the test of the play, if it stands up after that. So I'm really excited to see it.
Yeah, I mean, in the production that was there, were you there along with the director helping out?
On the original production, yes. Always am. In fact, I've just come back from Cape Town, where I've opened a show and was working with them for 5 weeks. So the first production, you'd like to be there. The second production, you have to say people made their own connection with it, and either there is something there or there's no point cheating it.
Well, I think you will make your own judgments, and of course here we are in the United States and trying to do British accents and whatnot, but I was very taken by the production, and we're going to be speaking with Dan Garrity, the director, in just a couple of minutes. But I'm so looking forward to hearing what you think about it. We're going to be talking to, on Monday, to Billy Ivory, who has done the film version for the BBC 4 of Women in Love.
Yep.
Have you been involved at all in that production?
Well, Billy and I are old friends. And we, very, very strange, the last time we saw each other was on a plane to Cape Town, and there was an empty seat by me. This was a couple of months back. And it was filled by Billy, I hadn't seen in ages. He was going down to film Women in Love in Cape Town. Seemed a bit odd as it's set in Nottingham in England, but the BBC works in mysterious ways.
Right.
And I was down there to do workshops and then start rehearsal on a musical I was doing with the Platt Company. So, what can I say? We talked a great deal about it. It's a massive task that he's taken on. Because, in fact, I think he's using parts of the Rainbow as well. So I'm really delighted that I'm going to get to see it. I saw his latest film, which was a different film, when it premiered here the other couple of weeks ago. And he's a very fine writer, is Billy.
Playwright Stephen Lowe is the writer of Empty Bed Blues, which is at the Santa Fe Playhouse this weekend and next. Thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Absolute pleasure.
I'm very happy now to welcome Dan Garrity. He is the director of Empty Bed Blues. We've just been talking to Stephen Lowe, the playwright, and Christopher Dempsey joins us. He plays D.H. Lawrence in Empty Bed Blues, which is at the Santa Fe Playhouse this weekend and next.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, D.H. Lawrence, I mean, Christopher, you are D.H. Lawrence. You look like him. You portray him. What is the process of getting into this character for you?
It's, well, it's definitely probably the deepest I've had to go with a character, I think, definitely at least at the Playhouse, in really connecting with what is going on with him at that point in his life. It brings up a lot of different things. There's a lot of rage, there's a lot of repression, anger, just dealing with that failing grip on mortality. And that really defines it more than anything.
And here's D.H. Lawrence at the end of his life. He's dying of tuberculosis. He's impotent. He's still doing his work. Probably wishes he had decades in front of him.
Exactly. And to be able to keep doing it, he's creating as much as he can, and yet he's really on the doorstep of destitution. And not having any money, and no money for Frida moving forward after his death, and trying to secure that, and in going to meet with the Crosbys as he does, in an attempt to get Lady Chatterley moving and published, it's a difficult battle for him to achieve everything that he wants to do.
Dan Garrity, what attracted you about this play and led you to become the director of it?
I like that the play is a parsing of artistic passion. Here you have D.H. Lawrence, as Chris just said, late in his life, and he's desperately trying to get his later life's masterwork published. It's been deemed obscene. That label has tarred it and him, and he doesn't know where the next dime is coming from. And, you know, when you think about D.H. Lawrence's literary career, I mean, a storied career indeed, but in his younger years, Sons and Lovers is the masterwork of his younger life. and Lady Chatterley's Lover stood as the legacy for his later years. You know, it's such an interesting journey that Lawrence tried to make. You know, it's not until 1959 that it's finally published, and even then, it sparks
30 years after his
30 death. Years after his death, and even then, it sparks an obscenity trial. Except then, there's a landmark ruling about censorship and artistic expression. So for me,
based on this book,
I mean, so for me, I draw a clear line between the eventual publication and that ruling in 1960 as a sort of ushering in of the whole 60s sexual revolution and the way the arts changed in reflection of that decision. So that was one of the things I thought made the piece larger than a biography, if you will. And it's not really. I mean, what Stephen has done, he's very cleverly fashioned this piece out of journals and diaries. And then he's added what playwrights do, the theatricalization of that reality, that heightened reality. You know, now, Chris, you just heard him say about his preparation and all of that, and the fact that Lawrence is so passionate and is also hobble, but I think you'd agree there's a lot of humor in that as well, the dark humor that comes forth, you know, in the course of the play.
So this is the 50th anniversary of that landmark obscenity trial, which allowed things that were deemed by some obscene and by other perfectly good literature to be published. And when you look at, for example, Lady Chatterley's Lover, and you try to understand what was it that made people feel that this is obscene, what do you think it was?
I think it was female sexuality. What you find in Lady Chatterley's Lover is a woman who owns her libido. And that was revolutionary when that was written on the page. That's what outraged people. I mean, here was a woman yielding to sexual impulse, not only yielding to it, but taking charge of it and claiming it, claiming her lover's body as her own and describing that, you know. I mean, Lawrence is very forthright with his use of language, common terms, you might say, vulgarities for different parts of the body and all of that. That's the first time these really appear in print.
And now it's a kind of old hat.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily as sexy as what Lawrence was doing, because I think what you have to remember about Lawrence is he's a great romantic. You know, the play takes place in 29, and the Lawrences are visiting an American expatriate publishing company in France. And they really represent the lost generation, that whole expatriate community that was part of Paris in the 20s. There was a nihilism at work in that culture. They were greatly scarred by the senselessness of what was called the Great War, never dreaming
World
that,
War I,
that
right.
there would be a World War II, so it was the Great War. And they burned their candles deliberately at both ends. Their attempt at immortality was within the span of this life. Lawrence, on the other hand, I think harkens back more to the romantics and the symbolists, and its life is to be savored and held on to for as long as possible.
Yeah, much more so. Much more so.
And I think Stephen has been able to build a dialectic within this play, because you get to hear Lawrence talk about that in contrast to this Harry Crosby character, you know, who's kind of just putting out this, no, in some ways we're already dead, so let's go for it, you know.
And again, like any really great work of art, it's an opportunity for reflection on your own time and what of our own time is just like this crazy 1929 sexual freedom or attempted sexual freedom and what has changed.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the dynamics that goes on with it is if you look at the lives these people are living, and by that I mean the Crosbys, and yet they're not inclined really to want to be involved with Lawrence's work because of the stigma that it has of this obscenity, and everything they're doing in their daily life is as obscene, if not more, than what he's writing.
Exactly.
I think it's very hard to equate our modern decades, if you will, with what was going on art-wise in the 20s, you know, because if you look at cinema, silent films had sort of reached their zenith, and now towards the end of the decade, sound is coming in, and it's made the medium all this more clumsy. Cameras are no longer free to roam and tell stories with pictures. They have to be rooted to one place so microphones can be accommodated. So in terms of the popular culture, movies, television, that sort of entertainment really held no sway whatsoever. It was words that burned on a page. It was painting that took us to new places, you know. And I think, you know, sex and sexuality in now sometimes is divorced from sensuality. I think no matter how frank the language is within Lawrence's work about sexuality, and as we talked about before, women's sexuality, you must always remember that the prose framing all of that is so sensual. You know, Lawrence loves to write about bucolic pastoral settings, and you know, things are fertile and fecund and vibrant, and you know, he builds a beautiful frame around his discussions of sex. And I don't think we experience that so much today. I mean, when you think about the sort of common vulgarity in terms of sexting and things like that, you know, it's very casual, but it doesn't really have any aesthetic weight to it.
We're talking to Dan Garrity and Christopher Dempsey about the play Empty Bed Blues. Now, that's happening this weekend at the Santa Fe Playhouse, and we're coming up on a whole entire D.H. Lawrence Festival. So the play is Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
The play this week, yes. We'll go now through our Sunday matinee, but in our final week, next week, we play Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with a Saturday matinee. And you're right, all these little ancillary events have popped up tangential to the play.
For example, the Women in Love, this two-part, it's really a two-film production which is happening at the Lenzik. It's The Rainbow, which is the original novel,
right,
to which D.H. Lawrence's
yes.
Women in Love is the sequel, is being produced. It has been produced by BBC4. Two 90-minute films, and we get to see them. It's the only theatrical release in the United States of America.
Now, Mary Charlotte, you know why that happened? It has to do, actually, with my dual connection between the Playhouse and KSFR.
Right.
And KSFR being the only carrier of the BBC in northern New Mexico, we were just able to network enough of our connections together, and they said yes. They said yes before they could think to say no.
It's a really major event, ladies and gentlemen. It's on Thursday at 6:30 at the Lenzik. You can get your tickets in advance or at the door. And there's also a cocktail party, a reception.
Yes, there is.
At
a
the
chance
Chuck
to
Jones
meet the screenwriter.
Gallery. And chance to meet the screenwriter, William Ivory, and to meet Stephen Lowe, who wrote your play.
Absolutely. Stephen's coming into town. We're going to be holding some workshops with him as well.
And so the number for tickets to the reception beforehand is 428-1379. That's KSFR.
Mm-hmm.
That's Linda Highhill. And on Wednesday, the 3rd of November, at Collected Works Bookstore, both the screenwriter and the playwright will be there. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they'll be speaking about these two, the play and the film. And they're old friends. They're both from Nottingham, which is where D.H. Lawrence was from.
Exactly. There's a longer story behind that about how we happened to get the play, you know, next. It was from some Nottingham residents who were also part-time Santa Feans who didn't know about the D.H. Lawrence connection to our part of the country. And when they did, they said, hey, maybe we could make this happen. So,
which proves once again that the world only has about 49 people in it. The world is very small.
Right.
And so, okay, so Wednesday we've got the Collected Works event at 4. Thursday we've got the reception at Chuck Jones Gallery, and then the screening at 6:30. And then Friday, once again, another performance of Empty Bed Blues, and Saturday and so on. But there's a workshop on Saturday, the 6th of November. Tell us about that.
Stephen's going to host a workshop. He's going to talk to writers. Hopefully it'll be writers who have availed themselves of seeing the play, because I know he'd be more than happy to talk about, you know, taking somebody of historical and literary import and theatricalizing them. So, you know, we're making an outreach to all the writers who have crossed through the Playhouse doors over the years. You know, we do that bench warmers thing once a year, local writers doing one acts and all of that. I'm hoping a lot of those participants will show up. And that should be a good time. That begins at 10 a.m., I believe.
So for more information, people can go to SantaFePlayhouse.org. They can go to KSFR.org. Any other websites? I think that's it. And Collected Works also.
You know, if you have those, you got it all.
All right. Dan Garrity and Christopher Dempsey, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we're going to take a break right now, and we will be back with Babapalooza, Robert Knott, and Rob DeWalt. Speaking of the arts in just a moment, please stay tuned. And we're back, and we're going to be giving away a couple of tickets, a couple of pairs of tickets to the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet Thunder Drums. I'd like now to introduce, it's not Babapalooza, it's Robert Knott, the inimitable, the inevitable, the fabulous, the handsome, the mustache-free.
Just for you.
Robert Knott.
I shaved this morning.
He shaved this morning just for moi.
Because it's my last show I'm going to do with you.
He's going to lie. It's not your last show.
It is my last show. Rob DeWalt's taking over. Please email things to him.
Okay.
rdewalt@sfmexican.com. Now, what's Ben Swan doing here?
Ben Oops. Swan is here. He's
hi.
Our, he's
hey,
our new
Charlotte.
Animal man. And he's here. Hi.
Hi.
Is
he writes,
talk about
he writes
this?
For the New Mexican. He writes about animals. And what do you...
Not that.
Tell us about your upcoming event.
Sure. Thanks for having me on just briefly here to interrupt Robert. We just had this really great event that's happening today at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter's resale store called Pumpkins and Pets, where we have lots of adoptable, lovely pets and cats and dogs come in, and we're having a little party with, I already got the hay bales all set out with the pumpkins and have lots of refreshments.
Are you going to play disco for the dogs?
I'm not going to bring Zach because Zach gets a little too crazy.
Yeah.
But we will dress up, and we hope people will bring their animals dressed up in costumes, and it's just a lot of fun. So I just wanted to remind people that we're having that between 4 and 6 today at our resale store, 2570 Camino Entrada. And we're also having these, I don't know if you had a chance to stop by there, but you should make it an effort between now and Tuesday. We're doing a sort of a Day of the Dead celebration, but for pets, called Dia de los Amigos, where we have these incredible altars built of people who brought in photos and candles and food to remember their pets. Yeah, and we have one at the store and one at the shelter and one at Zoe and Guido's, and we're kind of in competition. I think ours at the store is really, really awesome. We have this volunteer, Chris Gates, who really spent almost all day working on a really elaborate display. Anyway, so there's a lot of things going on.
So this is at Look at what the cat drug in.
That's our resale store. It's a fun store. There's also a lot of Halloween animal-related events going on this weekend. One at Zoe and Guido's on Saturday, and another at Teca too. They're all having pet costume contests. So.
And it's a great time to adopt a kitty or a doggy
or a puppy, so.
Or a grown dog. Grown dogs are the best.
Older dogs are...
Older, middle-aged adult dogs.
Something sage-like about the wisdom of canines and felines, yeah.
Yeah, and Robert Knott is pointing to the book, A Small Furry Prayer, which is Stephen Cutler, who is speaking tomorrow, right, at
Garcia Street Books. And there's a wonderful story by Casey Sanchez in Pasatiempo.
That's the best animal book I've ever read.
A Small Furry Prayer.
It's really, really, really good.
It's awesome.
Because I don't want to say unsentimental, because he has deep feeling for animals, but it's very intelligent and full of... It brings a lot of context to it besides love and cuteness, basically.
Exactly.
Like neuroscience and like his own life story and so on. It's fantastic.
Right. So thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Okay.
Hopefully see you there, eh?
No, I'm going to the rally to restore sanity.
She's taking off today. Go.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yep.
You'll have to give us a full report on it.
We will. I'm bringing my camera and my digital recorder, so maybe we'll have a little bit of sound at some point.
Oh, boy.
Hey, thanks again,
Swan.
For having me
Ben
here.
Swan, thanks for being with us. And if people want more information, they can go to the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society website.
Or call me at 474-6300. That's the store's number.
Right, 474-6300. Great. Thanks for being with us.
Goodbye, Ben Swan. And speaking of animals, let's plug David Abram, author of Becoming Animal.
Yes.
And we'll talk about his work tonight at 6 o'clock at Collected Works on Galisteo Street. There's a nice piece by Casey Sanchez in the paper today about how we need to learn how to touch base with our animals to be more, frankly, human in the best possible sense of the word.
Yep.
I promised Rob DeWalt, who will return next week. Happy birthday, Rob DeWalt.
Happy birthday to you.
And who is indeed taking over Speaking of the Arts, that I would plug some school-related Halloween events before Mary Charlotte gets going. So among the events, you have the Mall of Horrors Haunted House in DeVargas Mall, which apparently the people will tailor depending on the age of the group. Like if there's young kids going in, they'll make it less scary. And if it's adults going in, there's going to be killer clowns and zombies. That's
Uh-oh.
Why I'm going in with a little group of little kids. I ain't going to see no killer clowns.
How come cannibals don't eat clowns? They taste funny.
I'm not leaving, ladies and gentlemen. My spirit will stay here with Mary Charlotte. Carlos Gilbert, Elementary Halloween Carnival, noon to 5 on Saturday. Head over to that little school on Griffin Street. They're going to have a cakewalk, hay rides, a magic show, dunk tank. El Dorado Community School out in El Dorado has a 9 to 4 haunted house event on Saturday. Ties in with a silent auction.
When I was a little kid, I went to a haunted house once, and they had us blindfolded, and they put us our hand in this thing. It was so gross. It was awful. It was disgusting. And it turned out to be a vat of balloons covered in shaving cream.
Oh.
And when you put a little kid's hand to wiggle around in there, it's yucker doodles.
Somebody did that to me when I was sleeping in a bowl of water, and do you know what happened?
On to the next event.
Alan
Arkin.
What about
Allie McGraw, Nick and Jake, an epistolary novel set in 1953 against the backdrop of the McCarthy-driven Red Scare. And so on.
Oh, Jonathan Richards is involved with that with his
brother
Jonathan Tad.
Yep, Jonathan Richards and his brother Tad, who sound remarkably similar, I interviewed them this week, wrote a novel made up entirely of letters set in 1953. And what's great, it's a wonderful book. And what's interesting about it is some of the characters in it are from books like The Great Gatsby and The Sun
That's
Also
right.
Rises.
Those
some
the
of them are real historical characters.
Yeah.
And some of them are fictional characters that the guys made up.
Plus, it's fun because it's letters, so like you read one and it's only a half page, then you can take a break.
Yeah. That's good for those of us with major ADD.
Company is a Stephen Sondheim musical that Santa Fe Rep is presenting as its second production. It opens Thursday at Warehouse 21. Christy Carson's putting it on. You got to pay to get in. The phone number is 989-4423. Amy Hegarty wrote a nice piece on the Santa Fe Rep and Company. They did Anything Goes last year, which I missed, but I will go see Company this year.
Yeah, I'm going to go see that, too. In fact, they're going to be on the air on Tuesday.
Oh, good. So that's next weekend, and you should pay attention to that.
And by the way, Nick and Jake, the reading of it with Alan Arkin
that's
and Alan
McGraw-Jones
is tomorrow, the 30th, at 6 in the evening at Collected Works Bookstore, and also at Collected Works Bookstore on Tuesday at 6 o'clock. Eliza Griswold is talking about her book, The Tenth Parallel, Dispatches from the Fault Line Between Christianity and Islam.
Whoa.
Yeah, she's an investigative journalist, and she's a poet. And she spent 7 years traveling between the equator and the 10th parallel, Nigeria, Sudan, Somalia, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines.
That's
wow.
Amazing.
That sounds... Why didn't I not have her on the air?
I can't even travel between here and St. Michael's.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to say to that.
What were you guys? You're having some sort of giveaway for your Jigu Thunder Drums of China. Should we plug that again at Tuesday night?
Oh, yeah. Let's do the ticket giveaway. We've got two pairs
thunder
of tickets
drums.
About for Thunder Drums. And the fourth and fifth caller who call 428-1393, 428-1393, will get a pair of tickets.
It's always so complicated with you guys.
What's complicated?
The fourth or fifth, the eighth or ninth. It should be first come, first serve. The first one who grabbed you the phone. Come on, hop to.
Yeah, but that discriminates against people whose hands are arthritic.
That was a good answer. Remember the Jungle Gym movies where they always heard the jungle drums and it was like the cannibals who were not, to the best of my knowledge, eating clowns, funny or not?
You love that one.
Oh, I love those Jungle Gym pictures. I wish they were on DVD or something. Hey, I think I want to plug something for people, particularly young people, but it's for all people. The New Mexican does host a winter/holiday/Christmas short story writing contest, and we're going to run the We're going to run the quote-unquote winners in our Christmas Eve, December 24th, Pasatiempo. And Sandra Balthazar Martinez is taking these submissions. It's for Winter Tales. So if you want to write, if you want your kids to write, send it in. I don't know all the, I guess adults is ages 19 and up teens is 13 to 18, children through age 12. There are word length restrictions. WinterTales@sfnewmexican.com. That's the email. Ask for more questions. One more time, WinterTales@sfnewmexican.com if you want to submit. Deadline, December 1st. You do get a small financial reward, and you get your stories published in the Pasatiempo. Halloween, Dia de los Muertos. Man, the whole weekend is stuff like that, isn't it? You're off doing political stuff, and people are over here clowning around with pumpkins.
Well, I'm clowning around with Jon Stewart.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, not directly.
Well, I bet you wish you were. Dia de los Muertos.
I like Jon Stewart, and I like Stephen Colbert. Stephen Colbert, if you do spend your life doing broadcast journalism and interviews, there is nobody, and you are thinking about who you're rolling, there's nobody quicker on the draw than Stephen Colbert.
I think you're probably right, and it's funny because I like Jimmy Stewart, and I like Claudette Colbert, who was wonderful in this bathing scene in this old movie about the sign of the cross. She takes a bath with her female maids. Terrific, from 1932. Anyway.
You must come back.
Dia de los Muertos event at El Museo Cultural tonight, 6 o'clock. Head on over. Pay to get in. No charge. Sorry. Warehouse 21 has a Dia de los Muertos event tonight, 5 o'clock. No charge. It's aimed for the 21 group, but head on over there. A spirited reading, boo, takes place at the John Gall Meme Room at New Mexico History Museum with the likes of Joan Loge, Valerie Martinez, Miriam Sagan, Arthur Z. 6 to 7:30 p.m., no charge. That's tonight. There's going to be a bunch of Halloween / idea stuff, so take a look around and see what's happening.
Yeah. Now, at the Santa Fe Art Institute on Thursday of next week, the 4th of November.
Oh, I promised Michelle you'd do this.
Well, there's...
Because Michelle is great. No, honestly, give me 30 seconds. Great. We always get good press releases from SFAI with all the details we want. It's my last time to preach to the choir. Who, what, when, where, and how much? It should all be in the body of the email. So go ahead. Give Michelle and SFAI a plug.
And by the way, the tickets for the Thunder Drums are gone.
Oh, see, that's I tricked you.
So there's a program that is bringing artists and curators from Eastern Europe to Western countries to study. And Azat Sargsyan is an artist from and curator from Armenia. And Mykola Ridinyi is a mixed media artist from the Ukraine. And they will be speaking at 6 o'clock on Thursday at Tipton Hall. In the Santa Fe University of Arts and Design, and that is sponsored by the Santa Fe Art Institute. It's free. 424-5050 is the number, or sfai.org.
Good. Corazon on Saturday night has Devil's Night Inferno Party. This is Desmond from the Inner Sanctum telling you that Corazon has Devil's Night Inferno Party. I'm already afraid. I'm not going over there. I'm going to stay home and watch Beauty and the Beast or something. 9 o'clock at Corazon. You got to pay to get in. It's probably one of many Halloween-themed events happening around town at the various bars, dance clubs, etc. For example, Mike's Music Exchange in El Dorado has the Halloween Bash with a ballroom blitz, glam rock costume contest, 8 o'clock. You got to pay to get in to see that. And if you want to avoid Halloween, you and me know that...
You and I know.
Angela? The good thing is we both know.
Pronouns are us.
Savor is playing Cuban music at
San
Francisco.
I mean, pronouns are we.
Pronouns are you. Savor is playing Cuban music at 8 o'clock Saturday, San Francisco Street Bar and Grill, and that's always fun. And I will mention Rocky Horror Picture Show musical review at La Casa Siena at 6 and 8:30 p.m. over the weekend. Costumes encouraged, so head on over there and see what's going on. I think it's just going to be a weekend of stuff like this. Like Traveler's Market has Let Your Skeletons Out of the Closet at 2 o'clock Sunday.
Now, here's one of the things that I would be doing if I were going to be here tonight. Tonight is Afro-Cuban Night, and it is a four-part series of 400 years of African music.
Wow.
And so of Cuban music, including Afro-Cuban music, which is the part tonight. So it's focusing especially on the years 1700 to 1800, and it is at the Lodge in Santa Fe. The number over there is 992-2800, and after the concert, where there will be dancers from Cuba, this kind of music is not, I mean, we know the sort of typical popular Cuban music where they sell a lot of discs of it, but this kind of music you've barely seen here. There's going to be some Cuban dancers performing, and then afterwards there will be a dance party. And all that is happening tonight, and it's also next week and the week after on the 5th and the 12th. And actually, the one next week, which we'll talk about next week, is Cuban, French, and Spanish music, and it has a real
wow.
ballroom feel to it, a kind of old-fashioned chamber music ballroom.
Nice.
Yep.
This weekend and next is Empty Bed Blues continuing at the Santa Fe Playhouse about D.H. Lawrence and the various bed romantics of the people surrounding him.
And we talked about that already, but I'll tell you, it is really, really good.
So be it. And you also have on Thursday night, I got to mention country singer-songwriter Bill Hearn, one of my favorites, at La Fiesta Lounge, 7:30.
Now, we've got another ticket giveaway.
Here we do. For what?
Open Hands is having a Halloween dance costume contest fundraiser at Club Warehouse, which is inside Buffalo Thunder, on Halloween night. And
Ooh.
They are selling tickets, but we are going to give away a couple of pairs of tickets. So to the third and fourth callers, Mary Lynn.
Wait a second. You know, that's what we just gave away to Buffalo Thunder.
Oh, I thought we gave away the Thunder Drums to the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet.
That's what I thought.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, so now you got people out there furious because they got the wrong tickets. You guys are doing great today. It's not even my screw-up.
No, we gave away, lady, you can call them back. And we also have, we have a couple more tickets if we need them for the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet, if anybody's been out of shape. And you can call those folks back if you've got their numbers. But right now, we will give away tickets to the, Marilyn, is this okay? To
sure,
the,
yeah, that's fine.
The, Open Hands Halloween Dance Costume Fundraiser at Club Warehouse of Buffalo Thunder. It's on Halloween night. The third and fourth callers get tickets. That should be a fun one.
Wouldn't it be funny if I was an undercover IRS agent and what we were really giving away is like an IRS audit and they found that out when they got home?
Yeah, that'd be really funny. I'd love it. I wish I'd win.
I guess not. on Monday at... Museum of International Folk Art. It's the Dia de los Muertos event, sugar skull decorating, and it's geared toward all ages, 1 to 4 p.m., by museum admission, 476-1200. And as always, autumn and winter's a good time to go see your museums in town, many of which are free on Sundays for New Mexican residents, and usually a little less expensive for non-residents on Sunday. It's just, you know, you get a cloudy, rainy Sunday, head up to some of the museums and support them.
Hey, we have now Cafe Mambo featuring DJ Sofrito, and that is Latin dance music, salsa, bachata, merengue, and so on, Wednesday. Wait a minute.
Why not? What place?
The 1st of December. Okay, wait, this is way in advance.
Uh-huh, double cross, huh?
Never mind.
Yeah. Daniel Hoffman's going to lecture on... Oh, we already did this, sorry. We got you School for Advanced Research, sorry. No, we didn't. Did we? No. Africa's Diamond Mines and the Contradictions of Visual Anthropology. I try to be serious now, and I think that's pretty... I was mentioning Jungle Jim, so getting back to Africa Diamond Mines makes sense. 6:30, Thursday, New Mexico History Museum. Small fee to get in. 954-7200. What do you got? Anything?
Where is the Dwayne W. Smith Auditorium?
The Dwayne W. Smith Auditorium? Why, everybody knows where that is. Ask one of them.
I don't. I don't think this is even... Okay, I don't think this is even relevant. Never mind.
I think it's at one of the museums up on the hill.
I don't think it's even in Santa Fe. I think it's just completely different. Okay, Slow Food Santa Fe is having a celebration for Day of the Dead. It's on Sunday, Halloween night, at the Santa Fe Women's Club. You got to pay to get in, but children under 7 are free, and children under 10... children under from 7 to 14 have a discount. So Slow Food... Santa Fe, Dia de los Muertos. It's from 4 to 6 in the evening.
That's pretty cool. Heidi Lowen, always sweet and nice to us.
Yay.
I'll give her a shout out. She's got Smoking in the Fall, which is not about puffing on cigarettes, I'm happy to say. It's about smoke-fired ceramic vessels by Heidi. Reception 5 to 8 tonight in her gallery, 315 Johnson Street downtown. Show runs through December. One more shout out to Santa Fe Clay. They've always been very nice to me. 545 Camino de la Familia. They've got Fertile Ground, a group show tonight, 5 to 7 through December 4th. Albert Handel, one of the first artists I wrote about when I started at Pasatiempo, has a show at Ventana Fine Art, 400 Canyon Road, 5 to 7 p.m. reception tonight through mid-November. And finally, we'd like to mention Axel Contemporary, which is in a truck driving all over town like an old milk truck or the old ice cream truck. There's going to be work by Catalina Delgado Trunk and Christopher Gibson. Reception 6 through 10 p.m. tonight. The show runs through mid-November. Look for the van near El Museo Cultural. You can always visit axelart.com for van locations. Axelart is AXLEART.com.
Now, did you talk about the lecture happening at St. John's on Wednesday?
I did not get to that. Spikos was there.
Jose Francisco Salgado, astronomer and visual artist with the Adler Planetarium in Chicago, will be speaking about communicating science through art and technology, the Junior Common Room of the Peterson Student Center at St. John's College, Wednesday, November 3rd at 3:15. It's free and followed by a Q&A.
Excellent. Santa Fe Symphony has the Planets on Sunday.
I know. I wish I could go to that. I'm going to miss everything.
Do you know about whose music it is?
Isn't it Holst?
It is. Gustav Holst. Video projections by Jose Francisco Salgado. 4 o'clock at the Lenzer. Got to pay to get in. Call 988-1234. You got another weekend of flea markets, either at Tsuki or down at the Downs if you want to go. I think those things run at least through October, if not November. Breakfast with O'Keefe is Monday morning. How Artists and Images Seep Into Our Lives with Linda Swanson. 8:30 a.m. Got to pay to have your breakfast and such.
And by the way, the New Mexico History Museum is having this Threads of Memory lecture series, and you can look at their website or you can check the PASA because they've got more in their ongoing series with that wonderful exhibit.
PASA is very animal related this week, which is interesting. I mean, I'm only writing like one movie story a week for them, but they've got a great piece on the raptors of New Mexico. And I got to plug a couple stories for myself real quick this weekend. I went to the Old State Pen the other night, abandoned, looking for ghosts with photographer Luis Sanchez. Scary, dark, cold, creepy. What did we find? See my story in this weekend's New Mexican.
Oh.
And I've also asked three different regional storytellers, including Nazario Garcia, to provide firsthand ghost stories that they are, you know, always liked from their communities, and they're going to run over the weekend too. It's a piece I compiled. So a couple of fun Halloween-related events that I wrote about this weekend. And next week I jump back into some education pieces I'll be pursuing.
Excellent. And at 7 o'clock on Friday, November 5th. No, we'll do that next week.
Yeah, because after all, that's time. When do you come back from your trip?
Sunday.
Okay, and that's going to be fun. What are you going to do Sunday night?
Come back from my trip.
Are you going to get trick-or-treaters? Do they show up in your neighborhood?
Yeah, they don't come to my house very often.
I know. I try to send them there when they knock on my door, but they don't listen. I don't want people to knock on my door on Halloween night. I'm usually hiding under the couch while I watch old movies with the mummy. He's chasing people. He walks really slowly, but the girls always trip and he catches them. I don't understand that. How this stuff happens.
I don't understand much of anything, but I'm glad that you have been here the last 6 years, Robert Knott.
It's been a blast, kid.
And if I could sing, I would sing you a song of not goodbye, but au revoir.
I like that, too. I like that it's in French.
Arrivederci.
Got a dictionary to look these words up.
Which means both of them mean I will see you again. Or until we see each other again.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places. Probably not no bedroom spaces. What can I do? Rob DeWalt's going to do a great job and start sending him information. Although if people send it to me for the next month or so, I'll forward it on to you guys.
Oh, this is what I was looking for. Mamba Room Halloween Bash
That's
is on
right.
Saturday night at El Patio. They have a free dance class at 9:15. They've got a... I think is it either a dance contest or a costume contest? You have to check it out. You can call for more information. Nope, they didn't give the number. Anyway, it's 18 and over IDs. There's a fee to get in, a cover charge, but the Bash Mambo Room Halloween Bash should be great fun. It's from 9 until 1 in the morning at El Patio, which used to be Cloud Cliff.
That's right.
All right, Mary Lynn, are the tickets gone?
More importantly, did you give me the right people?
Yeah, right. No, I have to deal with that mess afterwards. We have one ticket left for the Buffalo Thunder, as I understand it. But
Open Hands Halloween Bash.
But I'm caught in the middle of something. You don't hear your music because it's in the office. I can explain it why afterwards.
We will have Robert Knott
function. Since you're leaving, Robert, please sing.
You can sing us
ahead.
Out.
Underneath, you go ahead, and underneath I'll sing.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I'm not even going
to
do it. I'm just going to say, Robert Knott, you are wonderful. You're the most wonderful colleague, journalist, friend, speaking of the arts person, radio guy, and we will miss you terribly, and we expect you to be back on a regular basis. I know that you're going to the education beat and not doing the arts so much, but we will miss you, and we love you, and we hope to have you back soon, and we're glad that you're still in Santa Fe, New Mexico. There, I've said it.
I love you.
I love you too. Hey, by the way, I haven't even talked about the most important thing next week, which is the D.H. Lawrence Women in Love event.
I don't understand that. Two men are fighting naked, but it's called Women in Love. The girls should be fighting.
It's Women in Love. It's at the Lenzic. It's a BBC drama. It's a BBC production. Two movies, Women in Love, which is the sequel to The Rainbow, which is the first book that D.H. Lawrence wrote in that series.
Which has two women making love, which is good.
And it's at the Lenzic on Thursday. It's the only time this will be shown in the United States of America. And you should go, and we're going to go. Bye!